Blog Talk Radio.
What do you know? What do you know? What do you know?
The birds and the bees are wise to the light.
What do you know?
So they took to the trees and took to the sky.
What do you know?
On top of the chain and safe from the rain.
What do you know?
What you know about the ways of the underside?
What do you know?
I bought a hot shot jet from an old San Guinea.
What do you know?
Cause they're hip to the moon and hip to the light.
What do you know?
And yep, but you ask cause you ain't got a penny.
What do you know?
What you know about the waves on the underside?
What do you know?
One hot shot cat from a North Bank Guinea.
What do you know?
Ain't it up with your ass cause you ain't got a penny.
What do you know?
Dropping bombs from above cut you all down to size.
What do you know?
Cause the hip to the ball and the hip to the
what do you know?
Yeah, the streets rose in two perfect ways in the night.
What do you know?
One crashes on my left and one on my right. It's all fire and brimstone, baby, so let's go outside.
What do you
it's
know?
It's all fire and brimstone, baby. I got my brand new pistol, baby.
What do you know?
One hot shot cat from a North Bay Guinea.
Hi, Darb.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good.
You know, I'm so sure.
I don't know. Maybe I am. Maybe I'm not. I guess we'll sort of find out. Hello and welcome to Logicast. Logicast is a weekly podcast. Airs every Thursday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We discuss philosophy, religion, history, science, politics, economics. I always feel like I'm leaving something out. Skepticism. Damn it, it's always
religion?
That one. Like, the last 3 weeks.
Say skepticism. Oh, you did, okay.
You know, not like we're not skeptics or anything. Anyway, this week's show will focus on the concept of faith. We're going to discuss kind of, you know, where it came from, what it means, why it's, in our opinion, sort of a useless method of belief. Tonight's show is called Faith, the Final Frontier. Mike Tyson actually helped me come up with this, come up with tonight's title. So, it was a joke.
I don't get it. I went to a Star Trek site. Oh, I get it.
Okay.
I get it.
God damn it, Darby. Like, when I have to explain the joke, I told people this before, when I have to explain the joke, like, it sort of ruins my flow. You know what I mean?
But you didn't have to explain it. You just had to wait for me.
All right. Well, I'm not really sure how long I have to wait for someone to get the joke, you know? So for those of you who don't understand, because Mike Tyson speaks with a lisp, if he were to say, you know, Faith, the Final Frontier, like,
yeah.
It would sound like Faith. Yes, yes, okay. All right. Well, whatever. Whatever. I spent like 10 minutes coming up with the title for tonight, so thank you for, you know. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. So anyway, I still haven't finished going clear. I'm gonna try to finish it tonight. For those of you who don't know, Going Clear is actually a documentary on HBO that was shot by Vice, and it is an amazing and incredible look into the world of Scientology. Something that you and I talk a lot about, right, is how kind of cults form, and, you know, we talk about how can rational people who conduct themselves or purport themselves in their daily lives with such success can cling to these sort of ridiculous belief systems that on the outside of the echo chamber are absurd. But whenever you get inside of that world, it's very hard for you to sort of separate yourself from what you're being told. I mean, it is fascinating, absolutely fascinating to really, you know, to get a peek into that world and then to see the people who were in it for years. I mean, I don't mean like 1 or 2 years. I mean, people are in it for like 20 years plus, you know, that just got sucked in and then only recently have figured out how ridiculous it actually is.
Yes, cognitive dissonance is a bitch, and all of us are subject to it. So there are plenty of smart people, as any research into this topic will tell you, that fall for belief systems that seem to have no basis in reality or evidence. And it's sometimes really hard to get out, harder than you think. So whether it's an official sort of cult or just a cult-like religion or any sort of social pressure situation that has components of, you know, sunk cost. We'll talk about sunk cost again.
Yeah, good old sunk cost fallacy.
Yes.
You know,
You may hear me coming in and out. It's because there's a guy behind my house who's chainsawing down a tree right now. And I don't know if you can hear it, but it's really annoying. It's like having a bee that you can't shoo away. So I'm going to be muting when I'm not talking. And just in case you hear sort of background noise cease and start again, please continue.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I can kind of hear the feedback, a little bit of it. That's something you would expect to hear in Texas, not something you would expect to hear in Seattle. you know, I'm just saying, you know.
Okay.
But one of the things, I will tell you, one of the things that I found so interesting about so far, and I haven't gotten through the entire documentary yet, it's hard, dude, like, some things are really, really hard to listen to. You know what I mean? Like, the very informative, but when you actually sort of start empathizing with the people and someone basically says, I wasted 20 years of my life and hundreds of thousands of dollars on this, it makes it very hard to watch that because you're like, this is a person who, you know, a human being who...
Human being's life,
yeah, and thought that it was, you know, it was legitimate this entire time, and then they get exposed to some of these, you know, these, you know, positions that are outside of the collective, and it's just, you know, I was there. I know you didn't grow up religious. I did. So I can sympathize with them in a way that, you know, that's similar but different because, you know, I grew up in Christianity. I didn't just latch on to a, you know, to like a religion like Scientology, for example. You know, but I don't know. Like, it's so fascinating, but it's still so difficult to watch because you realize that these are people with families, and you wonder how many family members that they, you know, ostracize from their lives because they were unwilling or,
well, they're,
you know,
subversive,
they were told
people,
to
right?
Distance. Yeah, like, right, yeah. Like, to distance themselves from, you know, from anyone who would talk badly about Scientology. I mean, it shares a lot of commonality with many modern-day religions. Really
well, and not only religions, we run across plenty of groups where, you know, no dissent or even questions are tolerated, and you really don't often end up in a great place if you silence all dissent and you don't allow questions.
I agree with you.
So completely. I know that sounds like general and vague, but it's true. I mean, think about it across the board, you know. You don't have any sort of real debate, obviously, is out of the question. And any inquiry into things that may be wrong with whatever your ideology or religion or whatever it is, they're not allowed. And demonizing the people that ask the questions seems to be a common theme. You know, we've run into this talking about Mormonism, that kind of same thing happens with them. And the Jehovah's Witnesses, I understand, are especially serious about, you know, the bad influence. I think they also might call them subversive. But it's pretty scary to see what happens to a group when it, you know, venerates one person regardless of who it is and shuts down all questions, dissent, other opinions. Reasonable inquiry. I mean, you're just, I can't think of any situation that's ended really well with a great, something that benefited all the members and benefited society. Can you? That went down in that direction? I really can't.
What, where nobody asked questions?
Yeah, where you're not allowed to ask questions and you silence dissenters and you cling on to your ideology no matter what. I mean, it's hard to imagine something like that being a thing that is good for you as a human or is good for the culture that it's in. I can't think of anything anyway.
Yeah, I mean, off the top of my head, I can't actually think of any, I can't think of any example where that ended well.
Me neither.
Ever. But, you know, it's very, I mean, I think that it's very sad because you have a lot of people who are, you know, convinced of this nonsense and unfortunately end up wasting a lot of time and a lot of money. And, you know, there was one part where a guy was like, I didn't really truly believe everything they did, but I love the community. I love the people.
I think that happens a lot.
You know, I think it happens in pretty much every religion, to be honest, where, you know, people want to feel like they belong to something. And it's even better if they feel like they belong to something that claims to have answers, even if it really doesn't, even if they're questions we don't have answers for. You know, a lot of times, you know, sort of human cognition will latch on to things that have answers rather than things that don't, because that's sort of how we're programmed. Even if the answer we're being fed or being given is complete bullshit. You know, I don't know. It was just really sad. Like, I made it through, you know, about half of it. And, you know, I remember just being whenever I turned it off, I was like, God, I'm so drained. You know, like to watch people
and
talk
about these terrible experiences. I watched the whole thing, and there are a lot of people talking that, I mean, it was decades of their life. And, you know, one mom who had left, and she she couldn't talk to her daughter or see her granddaughter who was still in the church, and it was heartbreaking for her. You know, it's easy, and a lot of people take this sort of easy, like, oh, let's just make fun of these people. They must be idiots. Well, all of us have believed things for bad reasons or for no reasons or on crappy evidence or whatever it is. And so it's, you know, you kind of have a pot and kettle problem if you're saying, oh, these people must be stupid for believing something like that, because that's really not, psychology doesn't bear that out. And just dismissing them as like, oh, what a sucker, too bad. Well, I mean, like you, mostly I feel compassion for them, because it's really, I can't imagine looking, I mean, I've made plenty of mistakes, I'm sure you have too, but I can't imagine looking back on 20 or 30 years of my life and saying all of that was for nothing or for damage.
And see, Scientology is a little bit, and from the perspective of someone who used to be a Christian, you know, like I don't feel like I lost 20 years of my life to Christianity. Like, I don't believe
sure.
that at all. And maybe because I didn't grow up in fundamentalism. You know what I mean? Like, my parents, despite the fact that they're both, you know, far-right conservatives now, my mom and my dad even were both pretty liberal people when I was growing up. You know, I mean, we, you know, had, you know, my brother and I, we were introduced to two people from different socioeconomic groups, different ethnic groups. I mean, you know, we stayed the night, we had relationships and friendships. Color was never an issue. How much money they made was never an issue. You know, like, it was, my parents now, for example, know that I don't believe in God, and both of them are, like, I have issues with my dad, for example, but that has nothing to do with it.
Right.
You know, my mom, you know, she kind of went through this whole period where she was depressed, and I think that's because she believes she'll never, but she also has the benefit of being a Catholic. So, you know, in certain sects of Catholicism or certain, you know, sort of lines of belief, I guess, you know, there's this assumption that if you don't believe, you go to purgatory, and, you know, then God will reveal himself to you, and then you can choose to accept him or not. And I always tell my mom, I'm like, well, at that point, obviously I would, because there would be evidence. Like, it's not like I'm
right.
mad or anything. I mean,
I thought they got rid of purgatory, or did they get rid of limbo? Or both?
They sort of waffle, if you will. And I haven't really kept up with Catholic teachings, you know, at least not the specifics, but, you know, but mom, yeah, she says that shit. And I'm like, you know what, that mom, if that's what you want to believe, that's totally cool. You know, you're
sure,
mom.
That makes,
I mean,
you
I,
feel better.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
But I was fortunate because I didn't grow, you know, I didn't grow up in fundamentalism. Like, I, you know, we grew up learning about science and dinosaurs and the age of the earth and that kind of thing, and it never conflicted with what my parents believed. And, you know, my parents actually were pretty good about, you know, asking questions and that kind of thing, you know, getting us to ask questions. So, you know, I don't know. Like, I see these people who go through this, you know, this sort of fundamentalism track, and it's actually pretty upsetting, because it's like your parents believe something and they want you to believe it so strongly that, you know, in some cases, in a lot of cases, they're willing to disown you, not talk to you, not have a relationship with you if you don't believe it, like, irrespective of however your relationship was prior to that, you know, if you don't agree on this thing, like, this is their deal breaker, you know. And you're right, I mean, with regard to the Scientology documentary, you know, you're right, I mean, that is some people's bottom line, is that their belief system encompasses so much of what they, you know, of their worldview, that it is impossible for them to separate themselves from it. And, you know,
and it, I mean, it kind of depends on, yeah, I mean, it depends on what you are looking at as far as, what, I mean, you know, when you said you don't consider your time a waste, a lot of people who aren't religious anymore don't consider their time in religion a waste. And I think that's great. I mean, because there are a lot of sort of religions and sects of certain religions that are, you know, that people look back on it and say, I liked my church and I you know, I might have believed this stuff I don't believe anymore, but, you know, I had this community of people who were nice to me, and I loved going to, I don't know, anybody loved going to Mass? I went to Catholic school, I never minded it, but, you know, the ritual of it appeals to people. They think of their family, their community, their Aunt Rose, whatever. So it doesn't seem so much like a waste. It's just the stuff that sort of sucks your entire life in and then shuts down other avenues for you. And makes it, you know, I was just reading about this woman who got out of a quiverful situation. And her, everything for her was shut down except for, you know, having as many kids as you can possibly have and making do with as little as you can possibly make do with. And, you know, just this constant source of stress and subservience to your husband and all this stuff. I mean, she feels like many of those years were lost because of what it's, I think it's about the constrictions and the demands that the religion puts on you and how much it affects what your life would otherwise be without it. And I think that's kind of important distinction to make.
You know, when Luna Lindsay came on the show, I didn't talk much during that show. It was actually one of the few times where you talked more than I did. but I learned a lot about, like, it, seeing it from her perspective, you know what I mean? And it's very hard, very difficult for human beings to completely put themselves, obviously we can't do that, but because, you know, we can't understand what's going on in someone else's. It's very difficult to really put yourself in another person's shoes. And, you know, listening to her discuss some of the things she experienced in Mormonism, it was foreign to me because I never experienced that growing up. You know, I mean, even with regard to, like, the people I interacted with, I mean, my family, for all intents and purposes, took Christianity seriously, but didn't take Christianity serious. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and Mormonism is very different. You know, I could relate to, and I wasn't even Mormon, but because I spent so many years as a child in Utah, there is, you know, you've moved away from sort of mainstream Christianity over towards Scientology when you've got Mormonism because of how much control the group exerts over your life. And that's a big part of Luna's book, as you remember. That sort of, you know, how much control do they wish to exercise over you as an individual, over your family, over how you live your life. And so in order to understand that, you kind of have to live in it. I mean, I only understand it from I lived around it for a long time, but it's not the same as being able to empathize. I can sympathize.
Yeah, I mean, it makes it, it really does. It makes it very difficult. And now I see, you know, I have friends of mine, obviously, who are Christians, and you know, for the vast majority, we have this agreement where we don't talk about religion because my views and their views conflict to such a point where it might make a friendship impossible. You know, and I don't insult them or call them idiots or morons for going to church. Like, I understand. Like, I was a Christian for over 20 years, and, you know, it wasn't that I had just had this epiphany where I was like, oh, fuck it, God's not real. Nope, door's closed, let's go, move on. No, I mean, I, you know, went down a very logical, you know, sort of pathway and, you know, eventually just realized I had no good reason to believe that, you know, that God existed. And, you know, but I really don't like that, though. One of the things that I hate, or despise, I should say, about the atheist community is the frequency with which that is thrown around, that someone who believes, you know, in God or multiple gods or this specific version of religion must therefore be stupid. Well, no, human beings are fallible and we believe in things that have no evidence, and there are, you know, good psychological, demonstrable, scientific reasons for why we do that. But it doesn't make them stupid or idiots at all. I mean, you know,
of course.
Now sometimes, you know, now sometimes I wonder how you can kind of. There are things that are internally contradictory right? So how you deal with those internal contradictions, that's actually what, when I talk to someone about religion, that's usually what I'm trying to get out of them, is understanding
yes.
how you deal with those internal contradictions.
Yeah,
you
because
know.
Everybody compartmentalizes things in their life. I mean, I suppose unless you're a, I don't know, Zen master or something. Most of us have to compartmentalize things, and you know, there are sometimes things in separate compartments that create cognitive dissonance, but when you're talking to somebody who you know is, say, a science-minded person, evidence-minded person, and you try to talk to them about the resurrection, and you say something like, well, you know that that is not a thing that happens, generally speaking, and you try to talk to them about that, the answers you get or the sort of responses you get to that sort of vary, but I've noticed that something that doesn't vary is the discomfort that happens when you ask that question. Or other questions like it about contradictory evidence or claims that are based on nothing or whatever. So.
Yeah, and so normally the response that is given, when I inquire about those internally contradictory things, is sort of what I refer to as the grand excuse, which is faith, which is about to act as a perfect segue. You just got to have faith. You have to believe. As if that somehow acts as a vehicle or acts as a vehicle for an explanation. And, I have plenty of people ask me all the time, well, you know, do you necessarily think that faith is a bad thing? I think that belief without evidence, regardless of the situation, or belief without good evidence, is always a bad thing. I don't think that you should, have beliefs without evidence. In fact, the evidence should form your beliefs, not vice versa.
Right. And I think part of the problem is that, and when we talked to Peter Boghossian, he brought this up a lot, and he's right. The problem is the sort of conflation of faith with trust. And I this is just my idea. I have nothing to back this up. It's just a thing I'm talking about. We place a high value on trust in our culture, right? If you can trust your family or you have trustworthy friends or whatever. And so when people sort of move that to trusting, they trust God, seen as sort of like, well, it's great. You trust your friends, you trust your boss, and having trust is sort of a thing that we admire because it takes sort of courage, and it usually means you're a trustworthy person, or people believe that anyway, right? If you can trust other people, you can often be trusted. That's sort of a common I don't know that that's true at all, but it's a common thing that people sort of assume, right? And so you,
right.
I think that's sort of been grafted onto faith in the sense that we're talking about from an epistemological perspective. It's really just, I believe this even though there's really no evidence of it. Or, you have apologetics where you try to construct the evidence underneath the belief, which, of course, is backwards. Not, you need to be arriving at your beliefs and knowledge based on evidence and not the other way around. You're trying to build a Jenga tower under, this block that you're holding in the air. And I suspect, and again, this is just me talking, I haven't read any articles on this or anything, that's part of where faith gets its sort of special place. Because it's seen as like a strength. Oh, you must have, great fortitude to be able to trust in things. Well, where did that get? I mean, if you said, well, some guy I don't know showed up at my door and he said he wanted to house sit for me, and I just felt like I wanted to trust him. So I gave him the keys and I went to Florida. Is that a good idea? Most people would say no, but I'm not really sure what the difference is. Maybe it's because all of their relatives claim to have, know this guy, in the church, you know, if we're talking about Jesus, right? Well, my mother taught me that he was trustworthy, and my, you know, this and that and the other thing. Maybe that's where it's coming from. There's a sort of bandwagon fallacy going on in your mind that makes, you know, the faith and trust seem so great. And plus, you get all, are you still there?
Yeah, no, I'm listening. Oh, I know,
sorry.
I haven't interrupted you. I'm trying to.
No, it's okay. It's okay. I just didn't know if I had been dropped again.
It's
heard,
actually on
like,
my
no.
12 steps of the podcast, you know. So, I mean, I have like a board where I, you know, don't fucking interrupt Darby.
Right.
Like, that's number one. Like, that's the first step in the 12 steps of the, you know, of our podcast.
Oh, I'm so proud.
Okay, go ahead.
Anyway, what I was going to say is you have so much social reinforcement of this blind trust because other people have it and they want to feel like theirs is justified. And so when you get it, you get all sorts of congratulations for doing it, and then they feel better about theirs, and all on it goes. What do you think about that?
I mean, here's one of the things that I have an issue with when it comes to faith. So people always ask me, so you don't have faith in anything? And I say, no, I don't have faith in anything. And then they say, well, what about relationships and people you meet and da-da-da-da-da? The thing is that I actually interact with those people, and I'm able to have a real dialogue. And,
right.
You know, I'm able to assess certain things about their character, about, you know, their background, about their body language. I mean, they're all... you know, all of these cues, some of which are verbal, most of which are not.
And
figure
you have
out whether
behavior,
or not,
to evaluate.
Me, hey, I'm actually going to give you the 12 steps, but we're going to change interrupting you.
Sorry.
Interrupting you to interrupting me. No, it's fine. Just make it. But, you know, my problem is that when people say, well, do you have faith in, like, this friendship or in your relationship or, you know, with this person you just met? And they treat it as sort of like an all or nothing kind of thing. Either I have all faith or none. I have none. I mean, I'm basing what they're telling me, you know, off of the current information that I possess, number one. Number two, because I can have dialogue, I can assess whether or not something someone is telling me is true or false. Now, sometimes I'm going to get that right, and sometimes I'm going to get that wrong. But it's not giving them just blind faith. It's not just saying, well, I just believe this because, and in order for me to believe this, I have to have faith. This person could prove me right or prove me wrong, depending on what they do next. And that is something that I don't think, at least even in my experience and in the experience of others, where if you don't have faith, there's no possible way for you to really truly believe in God. Because if you had evidence, you wouldn't need faith. And faith is belief in something without evidence, or at least without good evidence. So, and personal anecdotes, we talked about on the show before, completely and totally unreliable. Eyewitness testimony, terrible. So at the end of the day, because you're able to create this relationship, because you're able to create this, you know, this dialogue and this interaction, you know, I'm able to then assess whether or not someone does or doesn't deserve trust, whether I do or don't believe them. But I can only operate off of the info that I have. Whereas with faith, with regard to religious practice, even if you don't have evidence, even if there's no way for you to have evidence, you are still required to have faith. So it's not a virtue in any sense of the word, because you are literally believing in something without good evidence, without demonstrable evidence, empirical evidence. And it's really interesting to see how this has evolved over time. Faith was not a big deal to the early Christians, and a lot of the reason for that is historical, is because they were Jewish. And even with regard to Catholics, I mean, the early Catholics, you know, because for example, the majority of sermons for about the first 1400 years of you know, Christianity's existence were in Latin. People couldn't, the Bible was in Latin.
Yeah, people had no access to it.
Right, like they were mostly illiterate, like the general population had, you know, couldn't read, and if they could read, you know, well, let me put it this way. Those who could read and could afford to read usually could read Latin, but the vast majority of human beings did not have access to that. So for all of these years, you kind of had this thing where people didn't really know what they were being told. They followed it because of tradition. And, you know, if you go to, for example, I think it's 1 Corinthians 13:13, which talks about, you know, the importance of, like, faith, hope, and love. And I'm sure that, you know, there are plenty of you know, college-aged people who have this tattooed on their body. But, obviously, the most important of those was love. Like, faith, in terms, theologically, was at least early on ever really considered to be that big of a deal. Like, it's just not. You know, so anyway, you know, I don't know. Like, I understand that it's an issue of trust, and I understand that people sometimes conflate those two words, but don't confuse faith for something with trust, because with trust, you have a good or valid reason to accept what that person is telling you. But you could be wrong. They could be lying. They cannot be divulging the entire truth. Whereas faith with regard to religion requires absolute belief, regardless of whatever, you know, the external factors, variables are.
Right.
Yes, I'm glad you weren't swearing at me. Darb. Darby?
Hello.
I can, like, hear you clicking in the background, but I... You okay?
Yeah, super weird thing going on over here, but that's okay. Yes, I'm fine now.
Okay, do you have faith that the guy who's cutting down his the tree in his yard is not going to come over to your house and, you know, saw it in half? I mean...
Well, actually, if he saws it in the wrong direction, it will land on my house. It's pretty close to my house. I don't have faith that that will happen. I know the person who's having the tree taken down, and I have known her for a while. I trust that she will not be... hiring someone who has no idea what they're doing or is going to be like Leatherface with a chainsaw. So, I do have some information about that I'm using
It's not like if you had faith that the tree wasn't going to come down on your house. Like, it's not like that really affects reality. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I have faith that that tree is not going to fall on my house. And then physics takes over and the fucking tree falls on your house. Like, you're not then sitting there going, well, I'm still right. Well, no, you're fucking wrong, obviously.
Right.
You know? So, I don't know. I mean, like, from the research that I've done and the books that I've read on, you know, on faith, I mean, it's sort of this concept that has evolved over time, and more importantly, it's evolved over, like, the last 100 years. You know, specifically over the last, you know, kind of 25 to 30 years, has it all of a sudden become a big deal? You know, I mean, the idea that you should just have faith and that's, you know, that's all that you need in order to continue to be religious is, you know, sort of a new concept. Like, the history of Christianity has not had this. You know, it was assumed to be true by you know, not only, you know, early and, you know, late Catholics, it was also assumed to be true by early and now late Protestants. You know, and now all of a sudden there are all these questions being asked. Okay, so now we need something to fall back on. So what do we fall back on? Well, let's fall back on faith, because that's an easy thing, that is a virtue and you need to fall back on that. When historically, faith has not even really an important factor.
Yes, but how did it get to be such a virtue? That's my question, and I don't know the answer.
I did a lot of research on it, and I don't really know how it became such a virtue. I think sometimes faith is compared with humility, specifically in America. Because, for example,
yeah.
Islam does not really have a concept of faith, right? I don't know if you know that, by the way.
I did not, although now that you mention it, I've never heard anybody talk about faith.
Yeah, Islam
I've heard
doesn't
belief.
Really have like a... Yeah, Islam does not have a concept of faith the way that, for example, Christians understand it. It is sort of, you either accept it or you don't. This is what it is. Do you or don't you? But because Christianity sort of grew up in the developed world, both here and in Europe, which is where all the tough questions are being asked about Christianity. It's become kind of a concept, kind of a very easy cop-out. I have faith in, in God, and that's really all I need. Well, fuck, that's like the best way to just avoid having to answer any really hard questions. And ignoring the fact that it was not really a major deal or a major issue throughout the history of Christianity anyway, ignoring the fact that, it's something that is only shared by Christianity, not only shared, but primarily shared by Christianity. I mean, it makes it very difficult to figure out, how and when and where it, it evolved. But from the research I've done, apologetics seriously took off about 100 years ago, and it give or take. And,
yeah.
It became even more serious about 50 years ago. And, recently has gained a lot of ground in terms of trying to justify the existence of, of God. And, interestingly enough, one of the things that something that Matt Dillahunty said, this guy called into the Atheist Experience, and for those who have not checked out the Atheist Experience, you absolutely should. It is, run by, what is it? Is it TAC? What is it? The Atheist Community of Austin?
Oh, no, the Atheist Community of Austin.
They're running
the
show
for, like, Experience.
Yeah, like 10 or 12 or 15 years. I mean, they've been doing this for a long time. And Matt Dillahunty, who's I'm a big fan of, I know you are too, this guy called in. They have a call-in show every Sunday, and it's very popular on the internet. This guy called in, and he gave, like, a very sort of eloquent explanation for why he believes in God, or for why, not for why he believes in God, but, for the existence of God. And at the end of his spiel, Matt Dillahunty goes, "So is that why you believe?" And five or six guys, and Matt Dillahunty, "Hello?" And the guy goes, "No." So Matt Dillahunty's response was, "Why even bother with all the other stuff?"
Yeah.
Like, if that has no bearing on why you believe, and he's absolutely right, if that has no bearing or no significance on why you believe, then why even bother going through this, this sort of mental gymnasia of trying to justify it? I mean, if you're just basically going to say that I have faith in this and this is why I believe it, then why bother with all the intellectual stuff? I mean, why do that to yourself?
Well, think about it. It's, we've got a lot of smart people who are believing in stuff, and they believe that, they feel it in their heart. And I'm not making fun. I mean, that's what people say, and they mean it. They mean that. And so it's hard for human beings to ignore, like, incredibly overwhelming, strong feelings, And so they will say, "I believe this," but it also is sort of a, you know, it kind of automatically runs through the filter of their intellect, because that's, you know, if they're skeptics, or if they're science-minded people, or if they care about evidence, or if they're, you know, rational, critical thinkers, everything kind of gets funneled into there in one way or another. And so you're going to believe this anyway, and there you are holding the Jenga block, and you've got to build a tower under there, because you really want to set it on something instead of just holding it in the air. And I don't even know if they make Jenga anymore. But the point is, I think it's really easy to think, okay, I believe this. I know this is true. I know it. And so now I'm going to figure out why I'm right and why my feelings about this are correct and align with reality. Because I've heard many people say this, that no one ever seems to say that they came to their belief because of the cosmological argument, or they came to belief because of, you know, the ontological argument. Most people are already there, or they arrive via some, you know, other avenue besides their rational mind. They arrive from, you know, their emotional life, or they arrive from their social, being indoctrinated growing up, or from social change that happens in their group, or, you know, whatever it is. And they want to construct something underneath that belief. And if they have a sort of method in place already for evaluating information, because they use that method for almost everything else, you're going to try to funnel those feelings and those strong emotions through that, and hope that you can construct something underneath it, so your Jenga block isn't hanging in the air. So, I mean, I think that's why all the intellectual contortions, because they want it to make sense the way that they make sense of other things in their life.
You know, one of the interesting things is that people so frequently tell me about how, yeah, you know, I met this guy, this drug addict, you know, and I got, obviously, I have Christian friends. I think they're still holding out, trying to sort of convert me. But, you know, I talked to a Christian friend of mine who's, you know, a pastor at a local church. We talk kind of sporadically, and, you know, he told me about this, you know, guy who was addicted to drugs, and, you know, them, and came and found Jesus, and all of a sudden he's cured. Ignoring the fact that Christians love those kinds of stories, irrespective of how true they are, because nobody ever lies, there's also the question of, if you have an entire society, or at least the majority of people in society, saying that you need this thing in order to be better, and then all of a sudden people use that thing to be better, and now all of a sudden they're part of the social... that is a very powerful thing. And it is one of the things that actually makes us, in terms of being a social species, it's what makes us kind of unique, in the sense that we can craft and create these ideologies and, you know, these religions that claim to have all the answers, that can... You know, even similar to Scientology, that, you know, we can cure this, we can help you with this, we can fix this for you, we just need your time, your attention, your dedication, your faith, and your money. You know, and that's pretty much the way it almost always goes. I mean, in Muslim countries, for example, the argument is not, you need to be a Christian. The argument is that you need to be a Muslim. And, you know, in order for you to, you know, be cured of your wicked ways, I mean, Islam works very similar to Christianity in that regard. To be cured of your wicked ways, you need to, you know, give your all to, you know, first to Muhammad and then to Allah. Christianity is not so different in that regard. You know, these are people who are offering the answer to all of your problems, and it just so happens that enough people agree that you have these problems and also to agree that you need this thing they all happen to believe in order to be happy. So that's how you're going to be happy. I mean, it's pretty much the same thing with regard to even political ideology. I mean, very difficult to be, for example, liberal in this community. It's much easier to be a conservative because you're surrounded by so many other people who happen to be conservative. You know, and some of those things are geographical, and some of them are based on demographics, and some of them are based on education. I mean, there are explanations and reasons, you know, for this. I mean, what we find is that in, you know, in countries with low levels of education, you know, religiosity tends to, you know, in terms of its fundamentalism, tends to be a lot higher because people don't know any better. And, you know, pre-show, you and I actually talked about this earlier today. 10 million Scientologists can be wrong, and why can't 2.2 billion Christians also be wrong?
Well, I mean, and of course, if you are a believer in any one of the major Abrahamic religions, you're in good company. But especially if you're Christian or Muslim, you can say, oh, look around, and, you know, nearing 2 billion people believe, you know, agree with me. But that also would say that about as many are entirely wrong, because they're part of the other large population branch. You know, the Jews don't make up anywhere near as much as the Christians and the Muslims. And so,
they're,
I mean,
the chosen that, people. They don't give a fuck about the other two.
But that many people are wrong, because at least one of you has to be wrong, right? So
yeah.
You can't really say, well, could this many people be wrong? Because if you're a Christian, you absolutely believe that that many and more Muslims are wrong. So it's a weird argument to make, because if you're taking a stand for either one of those popular religions based on the bandwagon fallacy, you've already sort of defeated your argument, because all of those people, almost as many, if you're a Muslim, or more than you, your group, if you're a Christian, are wrong and believe just as fervently, if not more so.
You know, I always like to ask believers, irrespective of which religion, you know, specific religion they are, what does happen to the children who don't believe in your God? I mean, do they go to heaven? Do they go to hell? I mean, you know, sometimes I get mixed answers all the time.
Oh, yeah, there's all sorts of different answers for that question. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of that, it's especially great coming from the evangelicals, because they're so pro-life and so pro-kid that...
yeah,
you
well,
know,
they
I'm
say pro-kid,
about...
but they're really not. They say pro-life, and they're
well,
not either.
You're right, and not to disparage, you know, I don't want to disparage all of them, because I met some evangelicals who were like, no, we need to give more money to kids. Like, you know, mom and dad
yes.
who have children
yes.
should be given more money. And I'm like, I at least appreciate you for being
yes.
consistent. Like, I like you. We agree on some things. We obviously disagree on pro-life, pro-choice. But I at least agree with you for following it to its logical conclusion.
Yes, of course. Not everybody who is... Yeah, anti-abortion is also a hypocrite and doesn't want to fund, you know, babies getting fed. I didn't mean to insinuate that, because it certainly isn't the case.
Yes, no, and in fact, I've talked to quite a few pro-life people who do not believe in that. You know, who think that if children are going to be born, it's the responsibility of society, their responsibility religiously to take care of these people. And you know what? For whatever your reasons are, if kids are going to be here, we need to take care of them, period. They had no choice in the matter. But, not to segue too much, the question I always ask these people is what does God do with sort of the children who are not raised in Christian households who, like, might, you know, perish early? You know, who might die at, you know, sort of 14, 15 years old, might die at 10 years old, might have cancer, you know, I mean, might get hit by a car or something terrible that happened. What does God do with them? And it's really, really interesting to watch them watch their body language, because they're going through this in their own mind. You know, they're trying to figure out what exactly would the God I believe in do. You know, because these are not questions that pastors or priests ask, right? Like, you know, anything that could potentially contradict the belief system, they shy away from, because pastors and priests are obviously paid by tithing. So they need as many people as possible. They need as many asses as possible in the seats, giving money in the collection plate to ensure that they can continue to have a business. So they're not, you know, good advocates of this. And, you know, I've actually asked other pastors and, you know, one priest, how they feel about this. What I've been told is kids who did not grow up with God, who don't know God, end up going to heaven. So then the question becomes, well, why the fuck would you if they don't know about Jesus, you know, they get an automatic pass into heaven. So then the question is, why would you tell anyone then?
That is the question. What's the answer?
Right. You know, and then on the flip side, I hear people say, well, yeah, you know, I guess if I'm being logically consistent, but that's what they mean, you know, then they would go to hell. And I'd be like, well, that's great. So, you know, the majority of the world's children who are born today who are not Christians, because there's 2 billion Christians and 5 billion other people of different religions, no religion, you know, are all going to end up going to hell, including any children that are killed. So why exactly should I have faith in that God? I mean, why should I believe in that God? Like,
and I really want to know what the answer is. Like, what is the answer? If you believe that somebody who doesn't know anything about the good news, which is a phrase I really don't like, we could probably do a whole show on that, then why would you tell them? I mean, when you know, if you've got a loophole that says they'll go to heaven if they're ignorant of this whole thing and they don't have to worry about, you know, accepting Jesus Christ into your heart or doing good works or whatever you're, you know, or praying 6 times a day, whatever your thing is that you're trying to convince them. Let's say if you don't know, you automatically get to go to heaven. Why would you tell them? Why would you tell anybody? What do they say when you ask them that? I've never asked anybody that question.
It varies. The people who admit, or these children go to hell, you know, it makes it, hey, we got like 90 seconds, but I'm going to go ahead and extend this just for a few minutes so we can finish this conversation. You know, they admit and accept that these children are going to go to hell. And usually the conversation ends there because I don't press it, because there's absolutely nothing more that I need to say when it comes to that. What's interesting is, you know, the people who believe that there's like now this, you know, this sort of loophole that exists. It's an additional loophole. And I ask them to actually back that up theologically. Never once have I heard someone successfully back that up theologically. So, you know, the former tends to actually be the more accurate description. When they attempt to do so, you know, when the latter attempts to justify this position, it's more or less that, you know, well, you don't have any good excuse for not believing. You've been exposed to it. And, you know, my response is why would you tell anyone about this if by telling them you were potentially damning them to hell? How is that good for them? I mean, I don't know any other way to phrase that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. There's no other conversation to be had at that point because there's no other option. I mean, anyway.
Sorry, I'm muting on and off because it's the witching hour and now everybody's coming in the house. The dog's barking, and so I'm trying to mute you so that didn't overrun your last talk.
So long as the chainsaw is not going to, you know, cause a tree to sort of fall through your house, then I guess we're okay. All right, I think we're good. Did you say everything you wanted to say?
Yes, I did. I did indeed.
Excellent. You have been listening to LogicCast. We're on every Thursday, 8 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Next week, we are going to have our friend, David Fitzgerald. Love David. Author of Nailed and also author of The Complete Heretic's Guide to Western Religion. Book one, The Mormons. We're going to be talking to him not about mythicism, which we have argued with him about quite a bit. we're going to be
but
talking
instead,
to him
about his Mormon recent book. Yeah.
Right, about his most recent book. I am going to give him shit about his upcoming book because I think it's funny. I love David. David's a great guy.
We're going to talk about the Mormon book.
We're mostly going to talk about the Mormon book.
Right.
Look at you. You know, you seriously would have been like a great PR person for some sort of politician who just like talked out of his ass. I'm serious. Like you.
I didn't really mean that, guy.
Right. It's a compliment. Trust me, it's a compliment.
Okay.
By the way, Jeremiah Bean, who's been he's frequent into the show. How many? We've had him on like 5 or 6 times. I love Jeremiah.
Oh, at least 3. You might have had him on once when I was in Europe last year. I don't remember. But anyway, a few times.
Jeremiah is, currently running his own podcast called the God Theory Podcast. So, you know, check that out on Facebook, Twitter, and, just fucking Google it. Like, I can't do all the work for you guys.
Just find it. It's worth it.
It is great. It is really good. Really good. And, Jeremiah said he was at the American Atheist Convention in Memphis, said that people had recognized him on other podcasts, and, he was more than happy to, excited about the amount of, sort of traffic that the God Theory podcast was going to get. You know, fuck you, Jeremiah, for not listening to us. Fucking asshole. Like, we gave you more of a platform than anybody else did. You know, I'm a little bit upset. No, I'm kidding. All right. We will be on next Thursday at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Darby, always a pleasure.
Jared. Yes, indeed.
Good night.